Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of June, Anno Domini 2026. Yes, that's right. It's International Axe Throwing Day. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray, and I'm fresh out of axes.
Unbelievable. Take this, you'll need it. It's dangerous. At 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things you use, not the blues, take off your shoes, don't get the blues, if you paid your dues. Here comes the news.
I just got a notice on the Facebook stream. You could boost this post to up to 6 people for only $30.
Wowie! It's only $5 a person. I would rather those 6 people each get $5 over to donate it over on the page. All right, Microsoft's developer conference was last week, and this week Apple did the honors with WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference 2026, Tim Cook's last hurrah before his retirement. Interestingly, John Ternus, who will replace Cook as CEO in September, was not featured during the keynote presentation. They rolled out a plethora of new features and updates, including the long-awaited overhaul of Siri AI.
Whatever.
But you won't see the new hardware and software until fall. Well, some of it you'll see right away. In a move that shocked nobody, AI was a big focus of the event, but not in China or Europe, at least to start with. Also, it won't work on a phone with only 8 gig of RAM. So, Siri AI is only for some of you. Apple's AI included a lot of camera stuff, including spatial framing, which lets you move the camera angle or change the composition. So, you know, like
after
we're used
to do... After you take the picture.
Yeah, but like we used to do by just moving and taking another snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now you can do it after you take the picture.
Right. You could do it then, too. I take a picture, I move, I take another picture.
Yeah, you take a picture, you're back at your office. Oh, I wish that was framed different.
Yeah, okay. No real indication of how much you can do that, so we'll see. I don't know if you can go like around behind them or just, you know, 8 degrees either way. Siri is now actually powered by Google's Gemini, so there's essentially one fewer AI in the world, which isn't a bad thing. But don't worry, Apple says that your information never gets to Google. Not sure how Gemini can answer your questions without your data, but okay. Speaking of AI, Siri, which is now rebranded as Siri AI, can now manage everything for you. Email, calendar, documents, which gives you more time for cat videos. And, of course, hallucinating you right out of a job. But that's okay because Apple says that Siri AI is now a much better conversationalist, so you'll have plenty to talk about while you're unemployed. Craig Federighi, Apple's senior VP of software engineering and talking eyebrows, said that Apple's not doing AI for the sake of AI, but rather that Apple intelligence is more useful because it uses personal information and data. Not sure how that differentiates Siri AI from everybody else's AI, but would those eyebrows lie to you? Siri AI has access to all of your data, everything on your computer, your phone, your tablet. But don't worry, just because it's running Gemini doesn't mean Google gets all that information. They probably already got it anyway. And macOS 27 named Golden Gate will allow you to finally tone down all that liquid glass nonsense that so many of you hate. Oh, and it requires Apple Silicon, so those of you holding on to old Intel Macs, time for Linux. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's WWDC 2026. And your choices are, I must get it all now. Some interesting stuff. Great, more of the same. Meh. And who the what now? So far we have 19 votes, all of which are in either meh or who the what now.
Refresh your page.
I am. It is refreshing.
And refresh again.
Oh, mine refreshes every minute.
Okay.
By itself.
Because my vote is up there now.
Okay, your vote is up there now. All right. We'll see your vote in just a minute. But other than Steve, Steve seems to be the only person who's mildly impressed by any of this. Yep, there it is. I must get it all now. There it is. Okay. There's the update. Then, of course, you can vote in the poll. It's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can vote in the poll there. And, of course, once you've done that, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
Here we go for Steve's vote.
There we go.
It's not exactly Google Gemini powering series. It's the Gemini foundational models.
Yeah, because there's such a big difference.
Yeah.
But that's all right. It is the
tomato,
same.
Tomato.
Right, right. They're using the Gemini foundational models as the foundational models for Siri. I understand this. And
imagine the people that wrote the original Siri. Well, Siri was originally an app that Apple bought and bought that whole programming team.
Right. Well, it's back to being an app now.
Added it back as an app again. But for years, they were enhancing the features of Siri, and then 2 years ago, they announced all these great AI features that never happened.
Right.
And all the journalists and the pundits are saying, you know, something's got to give. They got to do something different. The people writing this stuff, but I've been working so hard. What do you mean it doesn't work?
Yep. Oops. But yeah. So well, now it's Gemini underneath.
And
it's essentially like the Gemma models that you can add to a Llama.
Yeah, and so run on your own computer.
Right, and run on your own computer.
And that's one of the biggest things that Apple has said about the new Siri AI is it will run on your device, and that's why it needs more than 8 gigs of RAM.
Right.
Or if necessary, it will go to Apple's private compute. Which is running on Apple servers and doesn't go anywhere besides there.
Right.
So Apple has traditionally been a very privacy-focused company for its own stuff. Somebody else voted?
Yeah. Good. There's two of you now.
All right.
Sorry.
Oh, no, if I refresh it, votes again.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah,
refresh.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll make a new window.
Or you could just go up to the top and
yep.
The thing. Yeah, look.
Double the number of people now must get it all.
AI is the new hotness. We're in a position nowadays where there are a lot of new toys available to us. One of the problems that we've had in the industry, not just at Apple, but in the industry in general over the last, let's say, 10 years, is there's been no wow factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing. You know, there were times when we brought out the 8286, which was a 16-bit processor, not an 8-bit processor. Wow, everything got that much better.
Mm-hmm.
We brought out a graphical user interface. Wow, that was so much better. There's an iPod. Wow, so much better. There's an iPhone. Wow. So now it's like, well, we upgraded the intelligence of your AI.
So? Yeah, they're not the events that people would be camping out the night before, you know, lawn chairs strewed along the street because they wanted to be first in line or they had to get their tickets to see what number they were going to be to enter into the store. And all those types of raffles. I mean,
when the three of us made breakfast there at
Egghead.
Yeah.
And
Windows 3.1, wasn't it?
No, I think it was Windows 95.
I forget.
I think it was 95. Anyway,
been so many.
Yeah,
which is when Apple lost their lead in the graphical interface.
That's exactly right. And the lines were out the door, and mm-hmm. there were just people everywhere making breakfast for people as they came in to get it. And it was the middle of the week, as I remember. And I asked everybody, are you going to go home right now and install it? No, I'm not going to install it till the weekend when
yeah.
I'm home and free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then why are you here now? Because it's an event. That's
yeah.
why.
Yep.
And you get to see the same people every time you show up at that iPhone line.
Yeah.
And then, what was her name? Angela Ahrens came in to run retail. First thing she did is cancel those opening lines. You can pre-order online, and it will deliver to your house. You don't have to wait in line anymore. People liked waiting in line.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter was of exactly the right age as each Harry Potter book came out.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to Barnes & Noble and stood in line, you know, till waiting for midnight when we could get the book. We made friends.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the same people for all seven books. Seven books? Yeah. And they were...
But there were eight movies? So where's that eighth book?
Yeah, they one book.
Yeah, one was too big, yeah.
But we stood in line, and we knew those people, and we'd catch up. Because, you know, it's like 6, 8, 9 months a year later.
Yeah.
And we'd say, oh, you've grown, and blah, blah, blah. It was nice. It was pleasant.
Yep.
And particularly what the first couple books that came out, the kids were younger. They would sit in the aisles and play with each other. By the time the last book came out, my daughter wanted to sit in Starbucks and drink some dessert before we got in line.
And it's interesting, the bigger show you go to. We used to go to Macworld all the time. You know, 100,000 people there. You'd run into the same friends all the time.
Remember Comdex?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. PC Expo?
Yes, downtown in the convention center. It used to be on both floors.
Oh, right, and the one in Rochester, too.
Yeah,
they had
the one in Rochester that was at the convention center. And at first, it was on two floors. And then you knew stuff was going wrong, that all of a sudden now it was just on one floor. And then they renamed it to the Home Entertainment Show.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, it was a very different experience as it went on. But yeah. I remember both Comdex and PC Expo in New York.
I went to Atlanta for Comdex.
Oh, yeah. And
margins were...
That was bad. Those were back in the days when I could walk, so that was not a problem.
Margins were driven down so much that companies couldn't afford to go to a trade show anymore.
I
guess... So at the Rochester Dread Show, I got some union guy so mad at me because I pulled my own cart full of equipment into the booth from the loading dock. Yeah. Yeah, you got one union to load your stuff in. You got another union to run the electrical cord. You got another union to put the table in. And another union to put the table cloth on the table.
Yep. Yeah, I saw a show in New York with... It wasn't Helen Hayes. Somebody of that ilk. A venerated older actress. The entire set was a chair, and she came out before she sat down, and she moved it, and she looked up, and she said, F them, I'm old enough that I don't care what the union thinks anymore. That she sat in the chair and started her one-woman show. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah.
I knew the guys backstage, so I went backstage afterwards, and they all said, she could do anything she wants.
Yeah, really.
Nobody's going to blow her in. Nobody's going to be angry. She can do anything she wants. Yeah,
I can remember going down to for Comdex. I always went to Atlanta. And, you know, I'd always wind up coming back with all kinds of software. Mm-hmm. They were shipping me stuff. But I enjoyed Atlanta, the underground city.
Oh, yeah.
In Atlanta. That was so entertaining because we'd go down there in the hotel, and then we'd go down to the underground, and it was like a whole different world down there, eating and entertainment and everything else. And it was a show after the show.
Yep.
Talking of the tchotchkes, the swag that you could pick up afterwards, the best part was to go through the show while they were closing up.
Because
they'd rather give something to you than pack it.
Yeah. Yep.
I went by one booth and they said, they opened to my presentation, so they knew me, and they liked what I'd said, so we were buddies. And so they said, anything you want? And I said, well, I really want the blimp. They said, well, we can't give you that one, but we've got one unopened. Why don't you take that one?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. So I had a 5-foot blimp.
Yeah.
That, of course, I couldn't, I had to get helium for it. But
yeah.
It was a motorized blimp that I could make go around. It was great.
When Macworld was in New York, used to be in Boston, we'd stay at a friend's house. We were like 10 miles out of Boston, and that was an hour trip. into Boston traffic. There were all these billboards that said if you lived here, you'd be home by now. But when it was in New York, we'd stay at the New Yorker Hotel, where Tesla lived for a while, so I got a kick out of that.
Yep.
And the Javits Center is only 3 or 4 blocks away. I can walk that. I didn't realize my first time there how long New York City blocks are.
A block, yeah.
Going to the hotel going to the convention center in the morning was fine, and everyone else there from the state at the hotel. Coming back, everyone is dragging these bags full of the tchotchkes and the flyer, and it was like took twice as long.
You learn when I lived in New York. I did theater in New York for a decade, and you're a walker. But again, that was back when I could walk. And I would walk from the village, the West Village, up to Broadway, mm-hmm. which, if you look at a map, doesn't look that far. But again, the length of each of
the blocks are not a block like we have here in Rochester.
That's right. Yep. That's right.
There was a
long distance.
There was a party in Times Square.
Oh.
So I walked to that, which again, a lot longer than it looks. But then on the way back, I missed a turn.
Oh.
Oh, jeez.
To try to get back. This is long before GPSs. Yeah. So now I got to go back to 8th Avenue, right? Okay. Well, that's 11th Street. Where's 8th Avenue?
Right. Streets and avenues. And I don't know if you're going north and south or east and west and all of that. Yeah.
And it was after a party, so that was probably part of the reason.
Yeah.
Walking to the theater. Was
I got to walk down Broadway for a while though, because
that's lovely. Yeah. Lovely. Now it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's one
back
thing.
When I was there, it was. Not, let's just say not lovely.
Yeah.
No, when I went down there, I learned after the first year, because I went down there, because I was the president of PC Cubed, and I learned after the first year, because trying to bring back all that stuff, it was just impossible. So what I did up is tags with that I could hand somebody that had all my mailing information and say, yeah, just mail me a copy. And they appreciated that a lot more, too, because they just turned it over because they had such a limited supply.
Right.
Thank you. And then my wife would sit there, you got another package? And I used to get so much. And
that was in the days when they gave away software that you normally paid for.
Yeah. I mean, Corel Draw and WordPerfect, and I mean, Hayes. Matter of fact, I got a couple Hayes modems one time, and Norton. I mean, I met all these people, Dennis Hayes and Peter Norton. I met him, and even Bill Gates. We met him one time. He popped over to our table, and we're talking. And that was one thing that really ticked me off is, we'd sit there and invite him to sit down, and we start talking about his cars, because he loved his sports cars, and he had one, and we were asking him about, because one was imported in, but it was in storage in that, because they had to go through all this emission, and we were talking a good 20-25 minutes, and he was really, settled in, just, talking to us like normal, and won the group, and then, of course, some folks saw that he was at our table and all of a sudden had to come over and start asking him about software and complaining and this. He'd go, all right, guys, hey, it was a pleasure. And he turned to us. It was really great talking to you guys, but I got to go.
You get swarmed
by the mob. He probably would have stayed there longer because we weren't talking about work. We were just talking about other stuff and just enjoying stuff. And like they say, there's always that 1%.
I sat for about 2.5 hours one time with John McAfee, back when he was sane. And we had a wonderful discussion that had nothing to do with programming, computers, viruses, none of that. We talked about all kinds of books and music and everything else, and we had a great time.
Well, the same with Peter Norton.
Yep.
That guy is a hoot.
Yeah,
he was so down to earth.
Yeah.
And, because we'd sit there and we had him at a small, it was a small conference room that he gave his talk. And, of course, a lot of the people left and our group was still sitting around talking. And he came over and, hi, how are you guys doing? Well, come on, sit up. And we've invited him to go out to dinner with us. And he did. And we were sitting around this table talking to him and then. And we must have been there at least 3-4 hours, for the evening. The evening just flew by, and we were talking about how he started this and how we, like myself, how I got into programming and all that. And we started about talking about, you know, some of the older systems and how he'd do stuff and how he had to build it up so then he could build his software. And it was just fascinating. It was unbelievable. It was a great night.
Yep. Those were the days when you could meet the people and sit with them.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, as long as you weren't rude or a jerk, they would sit and chat with you. But those were very different times.
Oh, Dennis Hayes. He showed us one time, like his hands, he had some severe burns on them. Because when he was doing the development of the Hayes modems, he was doing a lot of his own soldering and all that. And he wound up dripping some solder down on a finger and trying to shake it off. And then he's going, yeah, this is this one and this is this one. It was crazy.
Yeah, some amazing stuff back then. Not anymore. We don't have those events anymore.
Yeah.
Which is kind of too bad, but also... even if you see these guys, they don't have time to chit-chat anymore.
Their people won't let you.
They have their people.
Yeah.
Right, who won't let you do that. So, yeah.
It's sad because it was really a great time back in those days. I mean, it was so much fun going to Comdex for the week.
Yeah. And people were more generous back then, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ask them a question, they'd open up.
Oh, yeah.
And it was usually the person that wrote the software or made the hardware you were doing.
Or they would say, that's a great idea. Give me your email address or give me your address.
And tomorrow it would be there.
Well, going back to Peter Norton, that was one thing. When he came out on stage, you know, he had the typical shirt and tie on with the jacket. And all of a sudden, he'd come in,
crossing his arms.
He'd take off his jacket, he'd put it on the back of this chair, took the tie, he goes, I don't need this damn thing. Took off the tie, rolled up his sleeve, he goes, all right, now let's have some fun and talk.
Yep.
And that's the way he started his conversation. And like I say, that talk, we wound up an hour and a half, I think, taking questions and everything else. And it was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was, again, down to earth. You wouldn't find that nowadays.
No, you won't. Now it's all, you know, there's a publicist. There's people who write your speech. Don't deviate from that speech.
Yep. Yeah. His people get back to your people.
Yeah.
Type of
back
thing.
Back when Apple shifted to Intel processors, they had Intel people coming to Macworld.
Right.
And one of the keynotes we went to, the guy comes up in a typical Intel IBM suit and jacket and tie, and he starts giving his, you know, hi, I'm from Intel. Oh, wait a minute, this is a Mac. And he rips his tie off, pulls his shirt off, and he's got a t-shirt on underneath like the rest of us.
Well, we talked to a guy from Intel at one point.
Yeah.
At the frog meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was sitting there from Intel, and he said, we have a problem.
Yeah.
When you turn on your machine, you don't know it's got Intel in it. You'll see whoever made the BIOS.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see whoever made the computer. Then you'll see Windows, but nobody knows Intel. Our suggestion was, you own the processor.
Yeah.
Before anybody else gets to touch it, throw up your logo.
And now all those computers have those stickers all over.
Now they've got the stickers.
In fact, there was one model of computer I saw where it had a drawer that pulled out that had the 100 stickers on it because it didn't want to mar the outside of the computer.
Right.
Well, he even, while we were doing that, he goes, well, here, see, we got the sticker. And I pulled it off. And I says, yeah, and I can put it over on this one. How does it make it any difference?
Yep. Right.
He goes, maybe I should take that back to him.
Yeah. Those were the days when people would chat with you that way.
Yeah. And wanted to hear your answers, you know, but whether
and took them to heart, not just listened,
mm-hmm.
but often acted on them. Not always, obviously, but often acted on them.
It was just a, you know, a different time, and I don't know.
Yeah. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, that's a strike against us on YouTube. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Isn't that Joan Jett?
Yep. I love rock and roll. On the Jazz Station. Member supported. Jazz 9.1.
This month's patch Tuesday set a new record. 206 patches. Including 5 zero-days. 33 critical vulnerabilities, 28 of which are remote code execution, 4 elevated privilege, and 3 is and 1 is an information disclosure flaw. This comprises 65 elevation of privilege vulnerabilities, 19 security feature bypass vulnerabilities, 55 remote code execution vulnerabilities, 30 information disclosure vulnerabilities, 7 denial of service vulnerabilities, and 27 spoofing vulnerabilities. So, seriously, update now, but set aside some time. Of course, as always, Microsoft warned customers on late Tuesday, early Wednesday, that they may have issues installing the latest monthly updates on some Windows devices that were upgraded to Windows 11 24H2 or 25H2. They say they've solved that problem. Your mileage may vary. For those of you still clinging desperately to Windows 10, Microsoft has released the Windows 10 Extended Security Update, which fixes the June 2026 Patch Tuesday vulnerabilities and adds new functionality to monitor the rollout of updated secure boot certificates that replace those expiring this month. For those of you who are systems administrators, of course, this Patch Tuesday means a lot of work, starting from servers down to testing the updates to the OS, Office, Exchange, and everything else in your user systems. For those of you still using Windows Defender, why? I mean, there's a new zero-day exploit named Rogue Planet, which was, of course, released just hours after Microsoft fixed two previously disclosed flaws during June 2026 Patch Tuesday. The new vulnerability affects fully patched Windows 10 and Windows 11 devices, allowing attackers to spawn a command prompt with system privileges. So be very careful until Microsoft gets around to an update. But, of course, we're already here, so you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
One thing I should mention, you know, right now, granted, we're not in the middle of a pledge drive, but we are still a little short.
A little short
on our fundraiser to close out the year. So if you can find it in your heart to
year ends at the end of the
end of June. So we've got a little bit of a shortfall, and you know we could still use your support. So between now and say even we got the upcoming jazz festival, swing by. You know, like we've told people for years. When you're at the Jazz Festival, we have a tent right there on the main drag that, you know, you can see the stage up ahead where they perform free concerts and that. We also have a donation bucket sitting up. If everybody that went to the Jazz Festival, and that's literally hundreds of thousands of people, put in $1. $1 during the Jazz Fest for all you folks that go by there. We wouldn't even have a pledge drive.
Of course, we wouldn't mind if you put in 5 or 10 either.
As much as you can afford.
And as little as you can afford.
Yeah, it's coming up. So, you know, please stop by the tent, say hello. I mean, they also have some great giveaways. That's, you know, they're always handing out CDs and all this other stuff. And you get to meet some of the different DJs that are up there. And, of course, Rob Linton and Derek will always be there. Derek's always emceeing, and same with Rob Linton. So, you know, stop up there, say hello, and, you know, if you, like I say, whatever's loose change that you have, drop it in the bucket and help us close out the year in the black.
And for those of you who download the podcast, I know there are many, 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 many of you who do that. If each of you went to jazz901.org, clicked that big red donate now button and gave at the smallest level, we would end this pledge in the black. So please, please, make that pledge today. It takes less than 2 minutes. And I know these are parlous economic times in this economy. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're as strapped as you are, and we'd like to continue to bring you the sorts of service and shows that you've come to appreciate on this station. But we can't do it without your help. So please, make that pledge today before you forget.
Enough of that.
Nice. You had an interesting little typo on that story.
Did I?
Clingling desperately to Windows 10.
Clingling.
I guess they probably are clingling.
Yeah, they're clingling desperately. Is it? Oh, yeah, clingling. Clingling, can you listen to the snow?
No, I don't even want to think of that right.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the nice weather. Of course, some of this heat, though, it's been crazy.
Yeah, all winter long we complain how cold it is. All summer long we complain how hot it is.
Well, that's
I have a friend who says, I would prefer it cold. I can always put on more clothes.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that.
Well, my heating guy, he goes, you know, Dave, he goes, I worry more about people when their air condition breaks down. He says, heat, you can always put more clothes on.
Yeah.
When it's hot out, though, and the heat waves, he goes, you can only strip down so much.
That's exactly right. And people die in heat. They die in cold, too, but you do have so many people at least have the mitigating abilities for the cold.
As that thunderstorm went through the other day, we could hear the thunder and lightning. There was such a huge thunderclap, it set off the car alarms in the driveway. And so then I brought up the lightning map, and you could see huge storm over us and another huge storm out in the Midwest. And it was really interesting to watch those lightning strikes.
Yeah, there's a link on our website at lightningmaps.org.
And Florida. Anytime. Always Florida.
Yeah, you can always find lightning in Florida.
One thing...
you want to turn on your mic?
Yeah, that was Scott, our friend Scott.
And, hi, Scott.
He was on there and just saying that, to remind folks that they can just go to our website. And there's you know, the link there that they can donate to Jazz 90.1. And again, he wanted to just double check because he didn't hear that part. But yeah, you can go to the website and just
jazz901.org
and
hit the big red donate now button.
And you can specify whether you want it for sound bites or whatever, any other program that you want. We don't care because it's all the same bucket.
Wonderful.
By the way,
thank you gifts.
I don't think you get thank you gifts for this time.
Oh, good point.
I don't know, but hey,
but you do not have to give a lot of money right now. We do have something called Jazz-O-Matic. So if for a minimum of $10 a month for a year, which is $120, $10 a month is not really a lot of money for many of you. Let's be as honest as possible. You can go to pledge to Jazz-O-Matic, make that pledge, say, you know, here's my credit card information, my bank information, whatever. And every month, once you give us permission, we take $10 out of your account, or $20, or $50, or however much you want to give, and we do that for 1 year, and then we stop.
Yeah, it doesn't continue rolling over. It's not something, I got to go back in there and cancel it.
And at any time, if you need to cancel it because your circumstances change, just call the station and tell them. You won't be the first.
Yep.
You won't be the last. There's no shame involved in doing it. It happens to everybody. So use Jazzomatic and take, you know, a little nibble every month is better than one big bite, but we still get the benefit, and we need that money. So go on over to jazz901.org. Make that call. Make that pledge. I got to tell you guys, I've been playing with Ventoy. So Ventoy is a program that you put on a thumb drive.
Okay.
Then you add to that thumb drive, just by dragging them over, all the ISOs you want, all the Linux ISOs or Windows ISOs or whatever you want to do. And then you boot with that drive, and Ventoy just brings up a list of all the ISOs on that thumb drive. You pick the one you want, and it'll install it. Boom. Done.
So you could do a massive amount of different ISOs for, say, Linux.
Right. So you could have 15 different Linux distributions plus Windows plus, you know, whatever you want, BSD or anything else, except, I guess, Mac.
Yeah, I was just looking if they do DMGs.
I thought this can't really be this easy. What it does is it creates essentially two areas on that drive. One is the Ventoy bootable stuff, and the other just looks like a regular drive.
Okay.
So you drag and drop ISOs onto it. Then when you bring it up, it just lists all the ISOs that are in that particular area.
And it can decompress them?
And you just pick it and say, go, and it will, you know, it becomes a live CD just like it normally would. It reacts just like if it was the only thing on that drive. So I'm pretty impressed by Ventoy.
But does it install it permanently or does it do it temporary?
Your choice.
Okay.
So once
perfect.
You, so just like now, you could take a Linux Mint or an Ubuntu or whatever and say, I want to try it or I want to install it.
Yep.
Same, because what happens is once you pick one, it boots it just as if it were the only thing on that drive.
That is slick, especially if you got, say, five or six different flavors of Linux that you want to explore.
Right.
And to be able to just, without having to do anything else, just
pick
off
one.
This one, have
now,
five
again,
or six to try.
Right. Again, let
sweet.
Me remind you that if you run them from the thumb drive, they will load very, very slowly.
Of course.
Because thumb drives are simply not fast. But that has nothing to do with how fast they would boot on a normal machine.
Mm-hmm.
You get a normal Linux machine, if it's got an SSD, it'll boot in 8 seconds. If you've got a regular hard drive, it'll still boot three times faster than Windows.
Also, when you're buying your flash drives, the really cheap drives are only USB 2. So make sure you get a USB 3 drive if you want. I just Googled, is there Ventoy for Mac? And DuckDuckGo's AI assistant says, yeah, sure, you download it, and then here's all the OSs it supports. You can do ISOs, and you can do virtual disks, and here's an installation script for you. And then I go to the link it gives me. No, there is no Mac version.
Yeah.
It completely hallucinated the entire Mac version.
Yeah, they do that. But you can put, I have used it, I have installed it on both Linux and Windows have a version. And you create the thumb drive. I had a 16 gig thumb drive. So I had about 13 gig, I think it was, free for ISOs. So I could put, you know, they're 2 or 3 gig each. I'll let you do the math. The bigger your thumb drive, obviously, the more you can put on it.
Yeah.
Up to the capacity of the drive. So I did that, and I put several different versions on it. And I've been playing with using that. It's a very impressive little thing. And if you're one of those people who's playing around with Linux and you want to try it on various machines and see which one works best for you, Ventoy is a really, really nice way to do that. I was very impressed. I thought, okay, this is not...
Can't be real.
This can't be real. And it is. It's quite amazing. I was very impressed. So Ventoy, I forget. I think it's on our...
V-E-N...
I think it's still on the first page, too.
What is that? V-E-N...
T-O-Y.
T-O-Y? I'll have to check that out when I get home.
Yeah. No, it fell off the first page. I'll pop it to the top.
Yeah, but we already did. We already did Ventoy, and it. Steve's going to pop it to the top, and it's pretty amazing. I was quite impressed. I had
there are several utilities for burning ISOs to disk to a flash drive, but this one is the only one I've seen that will do multiple ISOs, and you pick it at burn time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We right. Suppose they burn when we don't do CDs anymore.
Right. But, yeah, so you just get a list of them, and there it is, and you're on your way. It's pretty impressive.
So I suppose if you had a big enough flash drive, you could make partitions and put different Windows installers and use a different tool like Etcher. And
Yeah.
I don't know, yeah.
Ventoy makes it so much easier. Pick it from the list, and you're off. Doesn't matter. As long as you can get an ISO onto the drive, as long as it fits on the drive, you can use it. So it doesn't matter if it's Linux or Windows,
even
or
like
a Minix.
Even 64 gig flash drives, the chips are so cheap now.
Right. And that's what I used. And then one of the other things that's on our homepage is local send. And I have probably 20 ISOs on my main system. And I moved them over to the system I was burning on using local send.
Mm-hmm.
So boom, boom, it was there. It was very easy. I'm highly impressed.
Which is kind of like a cross-platform AirDrop on the Mac.
Yeah, exactly. Only it works on everything. So if you are if you're strictly in the Mac environment, in the Apple environment, then you have AirDrop. But if you're not in the Mac environment, or if you're in a mixed environment, we have so many mixed households now. Local send will let you whip things around your network without a problem. And, by the way, those things never leave your local network. So it's not like you could send them off to Google Drive and then bring them back on the other system. But that takes so much longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it means if you're sending it to your phone, it's using your data and blah blah blah. This is just on your local network. It just goes from one machine to another. Boom.
A lot easier, faster. Yeah,
and like I said, when I'm going from my two Etherneted machines, it goes at a gigabit per second, and when I'm going to one of my laptops, it goes at 500 meg per second. So, you know, it's quite fast.
I forgot about that last night when I was. Customer brought in a FireWire drive to copy onto a USB-C drive. We don't have any computer with both.
Right.
And AirDrop just went too slow, so I copied it to a USB hard drive, and then copied it again on a newer computer to the USB-C hard drive. And I should have thought about local send on each computer, because the Macs, the two disparate OSs,
right.
if you're too far apart, AirDrop doesn't work. But so we keep a couple of really old Macs running, just someone always brings in something old.
I'd like to see if local send will work on the really old Macs.
Yeah, let's see what its requirement is.
And if particularly if they're Etherneted,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a gigabit switch, things are going to fly. If you've got... if you've been angry that there wasn't anything as good as AirDrop for the non-Mac systems, there is. And it works on everything, including Macs, and Android, and iOS, and Linux, and Windows. And so local send is also on our front page.
And the web. You can open two web pages and send it that way.
Yeah.
A web page on each end.
Now, again, that's going to be slower because you're going over the Internet, but it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it local to local, your files never leave your local network, which is much more secure than sending it to a drive somewhere in the ether and then pulling it back down again. So, yeah, either way works, but one is more secure and significantly faster. So, yeah, I would... I would take a look at local send if you move a lot of files locally. And I do it all the time now. I do, as I may have mentioned once or twice in the past, I write a weekly newsletter for that people subscribe to at AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. When I am writing an answer for a Windows machine, I use my Windows laptop, and I take screenshots.
One of his Windows laptops.
One of my... Well, I have a Windows laptop and a Windows tablet now with a keyboard. A two-in-one or whatever they call it.
An addiction to tablets or laptops.
I am into laptops. I'm thinking of taking my Windows laptop, though, and turning it into a Linux machine because it is essentially this laptop here, 12 years newer.
Mm-hmm.
So I just might end up doing that at some point. But right now I'm using it. So when I write an answer to somebody and I need to put in a picture, I do a screenshot on the Windows machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing the, sneaker net, put it on a thumb drive, move it over, blah, blah, blah. Now I just use local send and just flies right over. I'm done. It's there. I'm finished. It's very easy, very fast.
And it works on all platforms?
And it works on every single platform. Now, again, I don't know how far back it can go.
I can't find anything on system requirements. It just says download now.
Well, your job,
homework,
assuming you decide to accept it,
yeah,
is when you go home this week.
Do your research.
Your assignment.
Try it on some of these old computers we have at work.
Yep. The whoever wrote local send, and I should probably know that, did a great job. Did a great job. It's open source. It's cross platform. It does kind of everything, and you can give it your own names, or you can just let it pick some random name like Fast Papaya, as you can see there.
Tien Donam is his name.
Yeah, that's right.
Their name. I'm not sure the gender of a. I'm guessing Vietnamese name.
Probably, possibly, sure. Local send, and it's multiple languages, and it's there's no ads, there's no tracking.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% free. It's not like there's a hidden cost, you've used it 10 times, and now you have to pay for it. It doesn't do any of that.
He's German.
Of course he is. and unless you're using... unless you're using going to the web, it all happens over your local network. And yes, every transfer is encrypted. You can also set a PIN, by the way. So I could send you, using local send, a document, which you can't open unless you've got the PIN.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So there's all kinds of very cool things. They show up in your downloads folder just like any download would. And it's available for Windows and Mac and Linux and Android, iOS. And it doesn't require a login, so it's not like you have to create an account somewhere. I'm just really impressed. It's one of those pieces of software.
And it's small. The Mac version is only 83 megs.
Yeah, it's tiny.
Giving Steve Gibson a run for his money with tiny software.
That's right. There's almost nothing like it anywhere else on the internet. And you can take a look at the screenshots, and you can download Mac version. It's in the Mac store. It's in the App Store, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even have to know how to do it, or if you've got Homebrew or there's a DMG installer as well, so you should be able to do anything with it. And it's it's in the Play Store, it's in the App Store.
The random name it assigned for me is Great Mushroom 42. Open yours and see what it gives you.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of really kind of amazing stuff here, and I'm very impressed by it. It's in my... Pretty sure it's in my repository as well. All right, listen. That music tells us the first hour of this show is in the books. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but do not go too far. Listen to the lovely messages that are coming your way. Maybe take a little bio break, get yourself a beverage, adult or not. And we will be back with a whole nother hour of sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful for your support, Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray. And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And there it is. And we have Fred from Good Radio. We have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I got several things. The phone system there, well, the first time I called, it just rang a few times and then said thank you for calling and hung up.
Yeah, it's a new system, so.
I know. I'm just letting you know some of the flaws that you may not be getting as many callers as you would normally get.
Well, it's nothing we can do about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so listen, folks, if you call and that happens to you, call right back. We'll try to catch you before you get lost in the system.
And the other thing, Fred, is if you hear stuff going on, you know, like we're getting ready to go into a break of that, I'm busy with that. I can't answer phones. So folks have to be patient.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. I'm just letting you know if there's, you know, I know there's probably IT people or somebody, phone people that can tweak some things. The other thing is my donation made on the Jazz app. One of the things, all of my information is in the NPass password manager, and I don't memorize everything. That's all the numbers that are cards and dates and whatever. And I, oh, what was it again? I go back to look for it, and the app takes me back to the beginning of the donate page, everything blanked out, which took me several times to.
Yeah, because Jazz 90.1 does not save your information.
I'm saying when I go to another page, so I'm looking at the website, mm-hmm. I'm looking on the app, and I go to my NPass to see what was the last three digits of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back again. Everything on that page is blanked out immediately.
Oh, interesting. So, we'll pass that on.
Are you going in the same tab, or did you make a new tab?
No tabs. It's just two apps that are open.
Oh, the two apps open.
You know, it shouldn't happen. But I will.
It's unloading the app and then reloading it again, and it reloads empty. I bet.
I'm not reloading it. I'm just switching to that app.
Right.
Like I would any other 100 and some apps I got on the phone. Anyway, that just a minor thing. I did manage to make the donation.
Thank you.
I was looking at be the third time since January, but
I appreciate that. We do. We appreciate it.
We gotta get it done. So everybody out there, persist. Okay, it may take you a half hour to get through and get everything done, but persist.
We appreciate it, Fred.
Hey, and if you do it at the website, it really does take less than 2 minutes.
Well, I'm just saying because I had to redo it.
Right, right. No, I get it. Thank you so much, Fred.
I'm not that bright. Okay. So anyway, on the file information, kind of just speaking of brain dead, the one we were just talking about, the file transfer
LocalSend
app, LocalSend. We talked about that last week. I put it on my machines. It worked beautifully for media from my phone to my PC, but from my phone, an Android phone, could not send anything but a JPEG or a media file, or any kind of media file, video video or picture or sound.
Huh.
I couldn't send a PDF from one machine to the other. I could send from my PC to my phone, but when I tried to click on it, it wouldn't even, all the little options that you had that you click on,
yeah,
wouldn't do anything. The only one that would do anything is if I clicked on the media button at the top. And I don't know if that's something that I'm doing wrong or if that's something that's just inherent in the Android phone. Like I said, it worked beautifully from going from machine to machine, machine to phone, but phone to machine was that one little glitch.
I will attempt that. I have not played with that.
So one of the things I did do was, I backed up a lot of my stuff, or all of my stuff, from my phone to my Linux machine, from my Linux machine to my 5 terabyte hard drive, external hard drive, and it's on 2 cloud storage spaces, pCloud and my Gmail account, Google Drive.
Right.
So yeah, that way worked. I don't know if, like I said, if you find something that's that I'm missing, or if it's just a glitch in an Android phone.
I'll check it out. Probably not till later tonight or tomorrow, but I will check it out.
Yeah.
All right.
So
thanks.
I'm still trying to figure out how to do Bash. Trying to get something to do automatic updates and automatic saves, backups from my Linux machine to my hard drive, external hard drive.
Oh yeah. I just put up a page on rsync and asked Nick. AskNick.com/Linux. There's a page on rsync and what it is and how it works. And
all right. I'll have to take a look at that. But all that being said, I just, the most important thing out of all that was just to make sure people hear the message of donate, regardless of how much effort and time or whatever it takes.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, things are tough, but they'd be a lot tougher if you guys weren't on the air.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that very much, Fred. Yep. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. Stay cool. He's right. You know, these are tough times.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope he's right that we make it a little less tough for you computer people. And we've said this a million times. If you added up everything you paid for all your hardware and all your software and sent us 10%?
Yeah.
5%? 1%? And I mean all your hardware and software.
Mm-hmm.
This drive would be over. Not for you personally, but by, enough of you doing that. So please, again, if you have the chance, dig deep. We would appreciate that. And for those of you who are new to Linux, I've started a page on Linux stuff at asknick.com/Linux, where I put some random stuff that I have found about Linux and how to use it and certain commands and features and stuff about Linux. So you can pretty easily head to that and see what it's all about there.
One of the other things though we should be promoting though is next Friday is the big kickoff, folks, and it's going to be literally a full packed with great names coming up Jazz Festival this coming Friday. It's the kickoff for the Jazz Festival. They have some great concerts. I believe it's going to probably be, I think it was always Tuesdays. They just have a lot of great concerts out there that you can go to and listen to free music, jazz concerts, local jazz groups, high school bands and that are out on that Glide Street. Is it Glide?
It's Jazz Street for the festival.
Yeah, but it's right there by the Eastman Theater. And, a lot of entertainment going on, great food, and just a great time. And you don't have to worry too much because in all the years that the Jazz Festival is going on, have never heard of any outbreaks of fights or anything else. It is a great family event. I mean, I see some young kids come down to that, to the older folks, and people from all around the world. Literally, I've met over the years a number of folks from around the world that come to hear these headliners come to this show.
There's 19 stages.
Yeah.
1,700 artists, over 300 shows in nine days.
Yeah. Soul Stew was the group.
A lot of them are free, but there is the Jazz Pass.
I believe
for the bigger ones.
Yeah, I believe they always play on a Thursday night. They had two shows from 7:30 and then again at 9:30. Soul Stew, and they literally packed the street. The people, you could be sitting in chairs, were standing up because they got the crowd going. And like I say, it is such a family-friendly event. I encourage anybody of all ages, and don't think, well, I'm not into jazz. You will find out that there is so much other music. They had to give the concert some name. So that's why it started out as the Jazz Festival originally. But it has evolved to where, like Steve was saying, so many different singers and groups. I mean, Steve Martin was there one year, playing his banjos. Hello, that's not, considered really jazz, but they are entertainers. And it's worth your while to just come down and listen to some really great music, meet other people.
Your Soul Stool is on...
Stew.
Yes, Soul Stew.
Stew is on Thursday at 7:30.
Yeah, 7:30 and a 9:30 show.
I gotta keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, because 1,700 artists.
Yeah, it's
But they
always
have an app out, so you can put it on your phone while you're wandering around.
And they have always been coming. I forget how many years now they've been coming, because I introduced them a number of years on stage.
This is the 23rd edition of the Register International
Jazz Festival. And like I say, you'll have so much fun and great food. Oh, some of the food down there was unbelievable.
There's a giant PDF you can get that lists the major clubs, or the major concerts.
Yeah, but definitely, if you got the time in that, it goes from the 19th to, what is it, the 27th. And just jammed with music. So go down, check it out, and have a great time, folks.
And, of course, 15. On Jazz Street will be the Jazz 90.1 tent.
Yep, that you can stop by and
say hi to those folks and drop a few bucks in that jar.
Different nights are different. DJs will be up there along with Rob Linton. He's usually always there setting up and getting it going. You'll see Derek floating around doing interviews with different groups and also emceeing different acts. So You'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it. It's if you're all into any kind of music, and as Steve said, it's pretty much any kind of music. Are you going to accept this send for me, or what are you going to do?
Oh, I just saw. So yeah, so I'm a giant mushroom. You're a determined potato.
I'm going to change the name.
Does that mean you're a Santarin?
Exactly.
Santerha. Did you hear the Doctor Who news?
No.
Very confusing. Russell T. Davies is gone. They've canceled the Christmas special. They're working with new distributors. And so everyone is reporting that Doctor Who's been canceled. Russell T. Davies comes out. No, it's not canceled. It's the opposite. We're going to do more and more and more. Well, the Christmas special's canceled.
Yeah.
That they haven't filmed yet. And how are they going to explain Billy Piper coming back?
Well,
are they just
going to
ignore it and start something completely new?
It was a flesh wound.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys, and that's weird news about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Joe Straczynski says he's available, by the way.
Joe, great!
So, anyway, I'm not sure where to start here, but the other day, a problem occurred. I've had a new computer. This is my first mini desktop. It's a Ryzen 9. It's got Windows 11 on it, all that stuff. And it has just been rebooting and freezing just randomly. It doesn't seem to have any rhyme or reason to it, like when I'm doing a particular thing. And sometimes it has rebooted all the way to the screen without even a password. It's really strange. And now I'm getting, I went to power it on one more time this morning, and it says, enter your PIN. This sign-up option is disabled because of failed sign-in attempts or repeated shutdowns. So I just left it off overnight. Use a different sign-in option, which it doesn't give me, it doesn't seem to, and keep your device powered on for at least 2 hours and then try again. I've never seen that message before.
Yes.
You guys?
Okay, so in some of that, it's not you. Part of what's happening there is that that particular error message means that it could not correctly make contact with Microsoft, because now, you know, you can't just run what you think is your Windows system. You have to log on with a Microsoft ID. And if your system cannot connect to Microsoft, it assumes you are a thief, a low-down, stinking, dirty thief, and won't let you into the system. So
I've got my cam turned off, too. How would it know?
Yeah. But so with that, you just kind of have to wait, which also means, by the way, if you lose Internet access, you can't log in, but that's a separate issue.
So I've tried just about, in backing up here, since it was rebooting and it wasn't, and it was doing weird stuff, I decided to do all the diagnostic stuff.
Right.
So I did in fact open it up, but I can only get so many parts out. I did check the seating of the memory and things like that they recommend. I cleared the CMOS at some point. I ran an entire Windows reinstall, but the thing is, it has frozen on me several times during the setup memory, the CMOS, whatever.
Right. Okay, so let's start with a
hardware.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, so let's start with your motherboard. You need to make sure you've got the latest BIOS. Check with your motherboard manufacturer and see if there's a BIOS or UEFI update for that machine, that exact machine. Install
it. I did, but I can try that again.
Yeah, do that. The second thing is that there are some direct drivers, generally from AMD, directly for that chipset. You want to go to the AMD driver and support page and put in all your information, and it'll let you select your specific Ryzen 9 model and see if there are any chipset drivers for that. Make sure Windows is properly up to date.
Yeah, I just did that. I did a whole. In fact, it was it labeled it. It was a reinstall of Windows, and it even said parentheses repair edition or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds like there was
for like a day that worked. There were no problems, and then suddenly I started doing it again.
Okay, the next thing I would try after those is to disable core isolation, or it might be called memory integrity. So what you do is open your start menu, search for core isolation, and toggle the memory integrity to off. This will slow any gaming frame rates, but it should make
a
more stable.
Gaming, so that's not a problem.
It should make a more stable system.
Look for those. I did blow, when I had it open, I did blow some dust out of it and everything, too.
That's important.
It doesn't seem to be overheating or anything.
The other thing is in your BIOS, check to see if overclocking or AI tweaking is turned on. That can or off.
Can you underclock it to be safe?
Yeah. There is some kind of burst feature that I did disable.
Okay, so that's good. There also should be something. If you have DDR5 memory, there's something called Expo, EXPO. If you have DDR4 memory, there's something called XMP. Make sure whichever of those you have is enabled.
Okay.
And that's where I would start.
Yeah, there are on the forums for this. This is a B-Link, BEE.
Oh yeah, B-Link. Yeah.
Yeah, and I see a lot of issues like this that other people have had, and I'm seeing others not getting their satisfaction. So I'm not sure.
Is it too late to return this model and get a different one?
It's been like a year and a half almost.
Sometimes you get a lemon and not a whole lot you can do about it.
Yeah, I think that might be it. I mean, it could be a power supply issue. I really can't tell. Like I said, if it conks in the middle of the setup memory, it's nothing to do with Windows. So I'm not really sure what else it could be other than like a memory or a motherboard issue.
One thing you can try is running memtest. There is a site called Memtest.
I did do that.
Okay.
Didn't find anything that needed repairs. Last time I know I ran a drive check too. I don't think I've done that yet.
Yeah, do but that too. That, but the other thing is, are you sure the fan is working? Check your CPU temps.
Whether it keeps working. I just loaded a system monitor. I forget what the name of the software is. HW monitor, HW something.
Well, there's also one built into Windows, which you could also use.
Okay, I'll check that. I was trying to find this. Some of these features I used to be able to find, but they've buried. So, and also somebody said if you power it on and off several times, but they didn't say anything about the timing of how to do that.
No,
you power it on, wait till it comes up, and then power it off again? Because this is not what... And it wasn't that what caused that warning I just got either. I tried that like a day
or two. Yeah, no, that's just voodoo. I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay.
But, there are some issues with Ryzen 9s without the right drivers. So, you know, the things I gave you in the order I gave you them to you are the things you should try.
Okay, I should have written down what I did in the order, but I was just trying stuff.
Yeah, always write down what you do so you can back out if you have to.
And never do two things at once.
Exactly right.
Oh, man, that's right. Yeah, well, I don't do that. But I did try a thing that was supposed to be checking the drivers and stuff, and it. In fact, it's one of those things that it ran and then nothing happened. So I'm not really sure that how well it ran.
Yeah, I don't trust many of those things myself. So,
okay, yeah. Okay, well, I'll keep at it. Thanks.
All right. Good luck. Yeah, it's this is the frustrating part, right?
Mm-hmm.
When there are so many possibilities, and you just can't quite tell.
You got to play beat detective, like you said. Write things down, what you did, and or what you might have turned off, what you might turned on, and slowly go at it. Back when we had the shop going, it could take days, just trying to narrow stuff down, because some stuff was even periodical.
Yep.
That,
those are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be going along good, and then all of a sudden, boop, but it had to run some time, and then it would quit.
Yep. And those are the worst. It's like your car is making a noise until you bring it to the shop.
Soundbite, speed hold.
And I get that. It's a tough thing. It really is. And I wish there were an easy way around that. There are some diagnostic tools that work. Got to be careful where you get them, because you have to worry about, there's some sort of bug it's a fake thing and it's actually a virus. So, be careful where you download from what. But what you download from where, sorry. But you want to be, so you got to be careful about that. But I get it. When things start not working, you start looking for answers and you start trying anything. And I do get that. Those little mini PCs, I've had one for years now, and I love it. It's my Plex server. And it just runs every day, not a problem. But some of them are a problem, and I understand that. I tend to put Linux on them, so it's a different set of problems or no problems compared to Windows, particularly 11 on a Ryzen chip. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far, because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in a few.
Before you call in your show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian all the way from Gates, New York on the line. What's up, Brian?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We're good.
Good? I'm glad to hear it. Regards to that last caller, I had a similar situation a while ago. I'm using Chrome, a Chrome box, like that, and it runs through a surge protector. Fine, it all works right. All of a sudden, I was having trouble with my word processor or anything, that the machine would suddenly stop, go black, and then pick it up again and reboot. Couldn't figure out why. Fired around with all kinds of things, like he was saying. Then I had, I think I'll have an electrician come by and check this out. He came in, and he said, just a second. Here's your problem, He walked over a plug, took out the AC plug that was into my, what UPC
right.
Machine. And, of course, it felt like it was tight coming out. He took off the thing. Said, there's your problem. This house was built in 66. And the receptacle in the wall was the old stick it in the wire, to stick it into the side of the contact. And you didn't have to screw it down. You just stuck it in there.
Oh, those were so easy, but the worst.
Oh, and the guy, you know, put in a fresh new connection, you know, in the wall.
Yeah.
And problem solved. Nothing to it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If he's got an old house, it's one thing to check.
That's not a bad thought at all. Yeah, when we moved into our house, which was built in the 1800s, my father-in-law did a lot of rewiring. Probably shouldn't say that out loud. I don't know that he got any permits at all, but he did a lot of rewiring. I understand that could be a problem. Excellent point. Thank you.
Well, it's better than the one on the top of my head.
I've seen the top of your head. That's
yeah, and I'm watching the YouTube. I can see the top of your head.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more of it than there used to be.
A lot less.
Right, a lot less all hair, right, a lot more head.
Yeah, really. All right, gentlemen, have a good time.
Thank you, Brian. Excellent point. Thanks. Yeah, that's one of the things. Well, that's what Steve was alluding to earlier. You just don't know where the problem. I mean, it could be anywhere from inside the machine to the wall or out in the world.
It's
with
a
power.
Detective work.
Yep.
And you're right, it's detective work.
Those are the frustrating service tickets that come in. I can't get my mail. Okay, that's a couple of things. Server problem, password problem. The computer crashes.
Irregularly.
It's so vague.
Right. Yeah.
What programs are? Is it the whole computer? Is it just one program? Or
it crashes. Well, how often? Well, can't tell you exactly because I can have it on for maybe 10 minutes and might do it, or maybe a half hour. I might do this. You know, there's no specific pattern.
One thing you can do is they sell a power monitor that you plug into your outlet, and it will tell you how good your power is.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize. You think 120 volts? No, it's a range. It's, 108 to 128?
220, 221,
is the,
whatever it
the,
takes.
The allowable range.
Right.
So, it could be running very low for a long time. All your neighbors turned on their air conditioner, and then suddenly it can jump up to 125. Now, and so a lot of people have surge protectors. Surges are almost never heard of, unless you get a lightning strike, and then it's too late.
Right.
But inside that allowable range, lower voltage is almost worse on your computer than the higher voltage.
Right,
so that's
surges can be handled. Power supplies are designed to have to handle surges. What they can't do is handle
spikes.
Brownouts.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So if you get a UPS that has a line conditioner or voltage regulator, some of the words they talk about, then the computer gets clean power, and the UPS handles all the highs and lows by feeding it battery as necessary.
And then you also, though, on those folks that use the surge protectors, once they trip, throw them out.
Yeah, even if they have a circuit that you can reset?
Yeah. I wouldn't trust it again because, it did its job. It saved you from your $1,000 machine burning up.
Especially the $10 surge protector.
Yeah,
right. So there's, if you're looking for a UPS, there's three types. Standby, line interactive, and online. The standby ones, you run off the power of from the wall plug, the mains, as our English friends tell us. You run off the mains until there's a problem, and then it switches over to the battery. Now, that takes up to 10 milliseconds, which may be too long.
Mm-hmm.
Line interactive corrects low and high voltages, but doesn't switch to battery power. online basically continuously runs off the battery and recharges the battery from the online essentially works like a laptop. So if you were to if we were to lose power here now, our two machines would continue to work because power would stop coming into the battery, but the computer's running off the battery.
Right.
The same thing would be with an online UPS. The computer runs constantly off the battery, and then the mains recharges the battery as you go. So if you get a choice, it's also known as a double conversion, online or double conversion UPS. That's the one you want. And if you're an electrician, don't call up and tell everybody I'm wrong. Those are the layman's concepts of those.
Yeah.
I don't need to get into the
PC-friendly
weeds.
Terms.
Right, I don't need to get into the weeds with that. That's just the kind of the way that works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, yes. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
I have a Dell laptop, a G7-17. It's about 3.5 years old. And my question is there anything I can do to extend the battery life? I've noticed it's getting shorter and shorter. Or can I put a new or have someone put a new battery in? How does this work?
Okay, so let's start with, can you recondition the battery? Probably not.
How old's the machine?
3.5 years
About
old.
3.5 years. Is this normal that it would be less and less battery life?
Yes.
Oh, it is normal.
Yeah, the battery... The chemistry, we were talking about electronics, let's get into the chemistry. The chemistry of the battery has a certain capacity. And as your capacity drops from use, then the time the battery lasts. So if you're at 100% capacity, say you get 10 hours. If you have 50% capacity, a fully charged battery only gives you 5 hours. That's what's sneaky about it. It will say 100% in your battery indicator, but the capacity is low, so you don't get that much anymore.
Now, as to your particular model, you can replace the battery.
Okay.
It's a little tricky, but you need a Phillips head screwdriver and what's typically called a spludger, just something to pry the case off.
A plastic pry tool. You don't want to use a metal tool because that will damage the case.
Mm-hmm.
I have used a guitar pick.
Mm-hmm.
A stiff one, not a...
I would probably take it to one of the shops because I'm not good at this and I don't want to screw it up.
Yep, but it is doable. You have to be aware that whoever you take it to probably will not have that battery on hand. So either arrange with them ahead of time to get the battery or expect to wait a few days while they get the battery in.
Is there a good model, a top quality model that to order, or should I call Dell?
Only going to be one type that'll fit that. I mean,
Dell sells their own OEM brand.
Yeah,
like $100. You can probably get third party equivalents for cheaper, but you never know how good a quality those third parties will be.
Right. Yeah.
I want a good one.
Yeah, if you're really looking for good quality, go with Dell.
Because it's going to be specific for that model laptop. Right. You know, not each one is interchangeable.
It looks like there's also the G7-17-7700, which is different than the G7-17-7790.
Right,
so
right.
You need to know what your sub-model is, too.
Right, yeah. But if you're taking it somewhere, they can do that.
I bought it from them, and it's all registered, and, you know, when I got it, the paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Take it to them, and they will be able to replace the battery.
Yeah, what they might have you do, because like Nick said, they don't have it in stock, what they can do is say, all right, we'll order it for you. Here's what it's going to cost. You pay that up front. And then that way they're protected because now they have the money for the battery and incentive for you to bring it back to their shop to have them do the repairs.
And then you pay for the replacement separately.
Yeah.
Do they have a local shop here? I mean, I don't want it gone for like 2 weeks or something.
Who did you buy it from?
I think I bought it right from Dell. I can't remember.
Oh, online?
Online. A friend of mine helped me, you know, when we bought it.
But yeah, you can go to some of the local stores here and talk to them about it. Say, hey, you know, here's what's going on. How's your policy in handling that?
Okay. But your answer to my big question is get a Dell battery from Dell.
Well, again, you can, no. Have the company that is going to do the repair get the battery because they're the one that's going to guarantee their work.
They'll be responsible.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to hold the warranty, you know, for that battery.
Interesting. Dell is
and their work.
Dell is Dell Online is pointing me to one of the You Break I Fix kiosks.
No kidding.
That are they
apparently are they Dell authorized?
You Break I Fix.
So yeah, they're more known for replacing phone screens.
Yeah, like they have what, kiosks in Walmart or something, I don't know, or shops.
Yeah, shopping centers.
I would take it to a regular local computer repair shop.
Yeah, that's what I think I'm going to do. I don't know, can you guys recommend somebody or you can't do it?
We would prefer not to recommend one over another because there are so many good ones in town.
Yeah, and, you know, do your shopping around.
Yeah,
You know, don't take the very first one. See what they're going to charge you for it.
Does Steve do that work?
Well, we're not Dell authorized, but we can probably buy a Dell battery from Dell.
But you can do this for me, correct?
Yes.
I'll probably be contacting you. Well, thank you for all that great information. Because, like I say, I use it every day like that, you know. I shut it down every night at the end of the night, and I open it up again in the morning, start it up, and it's on all day until at night. But in the meantime, a lot of times I'll unplug it and use it with the battery for an hour and a half. And that's when I noticed the life was getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, that would do it.
And one of the things we've seen, especially from some of the third-party battery makers to condition the battery, is unplug it, run it till the battery gets all the way down, and it will you'll start getting messages about your battery's low.
Mm-hmm.
Then plug it in, turn the computer off, plug it in, and let it charge overnight doing nothing. So fully discharge it, then fully charge it.
That can help.
But as the battery ages, that doesn't help as much as it does when it's a brand new battery.
Right.
Correct. One last question, and thank you for all that great information. Is there a normal battery life, or there's no such thing as a normal life?
No, there isn't.
The problem with batteries is because of the chemistry in them. It depends on how often you charge them, how much you charge them, how far you let it go down, how you use it.
How much heat it's exposed to. Cold.
There's no normal for batteries.
There's a PowerShell command for Windows where you can see with the cycle count how many times it's been charged and discharged.
Right.
Yeah, all right.
On the Mac, that's built into system settings.
Yeah, that's excellent information, and as always, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate.
Thank you.
Take care,
Have
James.
Have a great day.
Have fun.
Bye.
Bye.
That's a can of worms there. You know, so many variables that could influence that.
So my computer's 4 years old, and I've only charged the battery 131 times because it's almost always on power. And my capacity is down to 95%.
Yeah. Mine's down to 87.3%.
Yeah.
This machine.
Now, Apple recommends on Apple's batteries, when you get to 80% or lower, to replace it.
Yeah.
They don't allow us to replace it if it's above 80%.
Right. I use, on Linux, I use a program called INXI, which has, I don't know what that stands for, what it means. And it is... It can give you an astounding and almost overwhelming amount of information. But INXI space dash capital B. Now, lowercase b, that's something else.
Okay.
That's basic information. Capital B will show you what the battery is doing. And mine is is charged to 81.7%, and the condition is at 43.7 out of 51.1 watt hours, which makes it 87.3%. So, yeah, I can tell where my battery stays. And given that this machine, like I said, is 14 years old, that ain't half bad.
The original battery?
Yeah.
When I take mine out to do my ham stuff, I can drain that within an hour and a half.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's doing stuff out over the internet, and it, you know, and running this program, it can suck it right down. That's why I've got a battery pack that's got 32 amp hours, and I've got an adapter that I can plug my charging unit for my laptop into, and it sucks it right back on up, because otherwise, you know, after an hour, I'd be dead in the water as far as the laptop doing mm-hmm. just that.
One thing you can do to help your battery, if it's, you know, starting when it's new, don't charge it over 80% and don't discharge it below 20%. Now, on some computers, you can set that up in the BIOS. Not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't call me and tell me you can't find it, because you're probably right. You can't.
Yeah.
But in some BIOSes, CZs, you can say, you know, don't charge over 80% and don't discharge under 20%. Shut down. And you can do some of that. So, for example, in almost every computer, there's a power management section in your settings. And you can set it to shut down at 20%, which means when you get there, it mm-hmm. will shut the machine down and therefore not.
I've also.
But it doesn't. They don't usually have a stop charging at 80%, but they do have a shutdown at 20%.
I've also seen some computers, I think it was a ThinkPad, say, we notice you're running on power all the time. We're going to discharge to 50% and stay there. And if you need longer battery, click here.
Yep.
Because you don't want to store a battery at full charge either. Or at no charge. You want sort of right there in the middle.
Right. I've got I had a ThinkPad that had two batteries in it. And the way it was set up, you couldn't charge it until they were at 20%. So I had to change that before I gave it away. I had to change that in the BIOS, because if you're at 50%, you decide to go somewhere, you want to charge your battery.
Yeah.
But you know, so you can, and again, it depends entirely on what machine you've got and what BIOS it has. But and some of that is just on you. Don't leave it plugged in all the time, and try not to charge higher than 80%, and don't let it discharge below 20%. And on many computers, you can also run a separate program that sits in the background and lets you know when you hit 80% or 20%.
Apple has an interesting feature, probably some of the Android phones do too, where you typically would charge your phone overnight. You plug it in, go to bed,
yeah,
because that's your alarm clock. It doesn't charge it until just before you get up.
Right.
So it like trickle charges it for the first 80%, and then we'll top it off before you wake up, because you usually it knows your alarm,
right,
and it knows when you get up every day.
Well, on mine, I can say don't charge over 80%.
Yep.
But every once in a while, it'll say you haven't charged over 80% for, you know, a month or something, yep, and it'll charge to 100%.
Yeah, Apple calls that optimized battery charging.
Right. And Android phones do it. Well, my Pixel does it as well.
Yeah.
So that helps extend the battery life. I get notices at 80%. It stops charging at 80%, and I get a notice when it hits 20%. Actually, I've set it to 25% because I often ignore the notice right away. But I can also go into low battery mode.
Yep.
At 25%, and it shuts down certain features and puts the battery into low use mode.
I do that on when I go to an air show. I'll put my phone into low power mode in the morning, because I know I'm going to take a lot of pictures all day long. So usually by noon, it says, oh, your battery's low. But I got a whole half of the day left. So put your devices into low power mode in the morning so then they can last even longer all day.
Yep.
It tends to go to sleep faster, so you wake it up. But typically it will stop polling for new mail every few seconds. It will stop trying to ramp up your cell phone, especially when we go to air shows. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So if your phone can't find a cell signal, it ramps up the power, looking harder, which drains your battery faster.
I had a person who complained about her Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have a lot of battery life. I said, you have it on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can turn it, you can set it so that you have to twist your wrist to see
flick.
The time.
Yeah, you flick your wrist, yeah.
Or you can have it on all the time, and she had it on all the time. Well, yes, that is going to use a lot more of your battery.
And the new Apple Watches have an always-on display at 1 hertz frequency and super low power, so you can see the time
right.
on a dim screen.
Right.
Like a real watch. You can see the time like when you're not looking at it.
What I don't understand is we used to have watches that auto-charge.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Now they don't. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who took this opportunity to make a pledge. We really need your help, so please, please head on over to jazz901.org and hit that big red Donate Now button. We need your help. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?